from the birthplace of radio's greatest era. Now, from New York, it's Radio Night Live with Kevin McCullough. Unlike anything else on radio today, it's a front row seat for great information with today's leading experts. Travel with a third-generation travel icon, Linda Perillo. The Fox News Medical All-Stars featuring Dr. Mark Siegel, Dr. Marty McCary, Dr. Jeanette Nishwat, and the OG, Dr. Nicole Sapphire. Legal analysis from former prosecutor and court journalism superstar Imran Ansari and Christine Nicholas. The quintessential heartbeat to New York hospitality. All joining legendary broadcast pro Kevin McCullough on a mission unlike any other, united to bring back New York. Now, live from Studio 111, here's Kevin McCullough.
All right, Kevin McCullough saying thank you for taking us with you. Look, I know that in the world and as busy as it is and with all the choices you have of what to listen to, the fact that you can pull up any number of podcasts and radio stations and everything else, just even on your phone, I am very grateful that you choose to be here and engage with me on the levels of different things that we think about. And I know that... you know, this election cycle is going to present a lot of interesting conversations. But as we get into legal stuff this week, it's going to be a lot about the election because these legal cases are they're looming and they could have a significant impact. If you did not hear, the state of Illinois yesterday decided to or a judge, rather, a black robed tyrant. I don't know if my guest will agree with that assessment of this person's character, but he removed the former president, Donald Trump, from the ballot completely. And this is the third state to do so. And it is likely that the ballot access case at the Supreme Court will be decided very soon. People are going to be upset about this because they believe that there's something wrong being done. And I find it hard to argue with that viewpoint. But I want to start with another issue of legality, and that is the former president, President Obama's Homeland Security chief. You may remember Secretary Johnson, Jay Johnson, who, was the guy in charge of Homeland Security when the Obama team was there. But he spoke out today warning that the border crisis has spread nationwide as sanctuary cities battle migrant crime and other consequences of the surge across the country. Now, this is fairly remarkable to have someone from the previous Democrat administration say anything, because it would be very simple for Democrats that aren't in office right now, not holding public positions, to just keep quiet, just not to say anything at all. The current administration is trying to hope that people don't notice. So every time a former Obama official steps up and says, this isn't good, that draws a lot of attention to Biden and his team's approach to the issue. But it's even more magnified because it is a fellow Democrat. And there's just no way around that. That's going to suck up more spotlight and more oxygen simply because they're on the same team. Former DHS Secretary Jay Johnson admitting the influx of illegal migrants at the southern border has yielded, this is his word, a hemispheric shift in multiple places. He said we had 250,000 apprehensions in 1 month of my second year in office. We had 315,000 apprehensions in all of the year of 2015, he said. So for the entire year of 2015, which was Obama's second to last year, Jay Johnson only had 315,000 apprehensions at the border for the entire 12 months. They had more than that in the first half of December of last year. I don't know that there was a month in 2023 that they didn't eclipse 315,000 at the border. So these are eye-popping numbers, and this is why he's saying something. He said, just for some perspective, I understand the numbers have dropped a bit of late, but longer term, big picture, this is a hemispheric shift northward. It's a crisis on multiple levels and in multiple places. Today, of course, current president and the former president both held events in Texas towns. President Trump visiting Eagle Pass and President Biden traveling to Brownsville as, you know, this issue continues to kind of roll up. Here's how they're going to deal with it. Biden repeating the same trope that he's said over and over again. I need the Senate to pass a bill so that we can start doing this. Trump saying, I didn't need the Senate to pass a bill when I stopped it. You don't need to pass a bill to go back to the policies that I had in place since you undid them as policies, as executive actions. You could reinstate those executive actions and be done with them. But Biden has tried to convince the country, and I would say unconvincingly, given what Jay Johnson's saying, that legislation is the only thing that can be done to stop it. Now, Johnson expressed support for legislation, and he urged lawmakers to pass a bill. He said, if we have a strong solution at hand, let's embrace it. Let's vote on it. Let's get it done. He said, I guarantee that if the legislation became law, numbers would help drop because we've addressed the problem and because people in Central and South America are seeing that we are addressing the problem. The theory is kind of like Biden's. If we tell people we're doing something about it, that'll just stop some of the activity. According to Fox News analysis, published last week, more than 7.3 million migrants are known to have illegally crossed the southwest border since Biden took office. I believe that number is closer to 9 million, by the way. Border Patrol and the federal government, they have disparate numbers, and I tend to trust the Border Patrol more than the White House. But that number by itself, even if you just take the 7.3 migrants that have been apprehended, that's greater than the population of 36 individual states. By the way, I was saying this 2 months ago when the number that I thought was right was 7 million. It's now bigger than 38 states individually. It comes from U.S. Customs and Border Protection, which already have reported nearly a million border encounters in the current fiscal year. So we're not even through February yet. And you got January and February. That's like 400,000 plus per year. Per month. Jay Johnson went on to say, it's a crisis on the southern border in Texas and in Arizona, and it's a crisis in Midtown Manhattan, just a few blocks from our studio. You can see migrants by the Roosevelt Hotel on the subways at Times Square. This is extended nationwide, and now the issue is, what do we do about it? Do we continue to play politics and scream about this issue, or do we fix the problem? Well, it's very obvious that you can fix this problem right away, and the president chooses not to. President Trump fixed it with executive action. He took executive actions that gave the Border Patrol the ability to patrol and not to apprehend. And he changed the entire focus. He had Mexico keeping migrants on their side of the fence until their claims were heard, not releasing them into the innards of the country, which is what this current administration has done. But you've got a former Obama advisor finally telling the truth about the border. That's not good news for Joe Biden. Kevin McCullough, grateful to have you here, the former prosecutor. Former prosecutor and current legal guru, Andy McCarthy, joins me next. Hi, Kevin McCullough. Wish there was an easier way to navigate the world of real estate. If only there was a way to learn from the best. Well, now there is. Saturdays at 10, our very own Dottie Herman, vice chair of Douglas Elliman, gives you the inside track to what is hot in real estate. Stay one step ahead in today's seller's market as Dottie gives her tips on how to make it through the tricky waters. Doesn't matter if you're new to the game or a seasoned vet, you need to listen to Eye on Real Estate. Dottie and her team of experts will guide you as sellers and buyers to make sure you're getting the best value for your property. Whether you want to become a real estate agent or work within the business, there is no better person to learn from than the great Dottie Herman. Why? Because she is the best. Period. So tune in, Eye on Real Estate, Saturdays at 10 on AM 970 The Answer. That's Eye on Real Estate, Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock on AM 970 The Answer.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
How do you feel? I feel great. And one of the reasons I believe I feel better is because I take Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule. Balance of Nature receives over 1,000 success stories every single month from hundreds of thousands of customers who've purchased billions of capsules of their fruits and vegetables over the past 20 years. You should check it all out on their website. Their products are gluten-free and non-GMO, and they contain no added sugars or synthetics. If you're looking for something to make you feel better naturally, you should definitely try Balance of Nature today. Whether you order online or call them direct, you must use the promo code GORKA to get this special offer of 35% off. Call them on 800-2468-751 and use discount code GORKA, or order online at balanceofnature.com. Use discount code GORKA to get 35% off.
You have all helped support MyPillow and their employees in these tough economic times. Mike Lindell knows this and continues to give back to listeners with deals on his most popular products. You've heard me recently speak about the My Slippers, Giza Sheets, MyPillow 2.0, and more. Great news! The MyPillow 6-pack bath towel sets are back in stock. They are extremely absorbent, yet still provides that soft feel you look for in a towel. The set comes with 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, and 2 washcloths. Regular price is $79.98 for a limited time. You can get this 6-pack towel set for only $39.99 with promo code JOEP. That's a 50% savings. Go to MyPillow.com. Call 800-651-0798. Use the promo code JOEP to save 50% on the MyPillow 6-pack towel sets.
Listen to Joe Piscopo in the morning, weekdays at 6. Mike Gallagher at 10 on AM 970, The Answer.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Mike Gallagher is in Israel and gets the real truth.
There is no genocide in Gaza. Hamas rapes, tortures, murders a bunch of innocent people on October 7th, and people on the left cheer for the terrorists. October 7th was the genocidal terrorist attack. Hamas is a terrorist organization.
The Mike Gallagher Show, weekdays at 10 on AM 970. The Answer.
Our hosts tell it like it is. No safe spaces here. AM 970. The Answer.
Ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
It's Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin McCullough.
All right, Kevin McCullough, glad to have you with us. You know, on Thursdays, sometimes I like to dissect some of the legal stuff that's going on in the news. There's lots of it these days. And my normal compatriot in this endeavor, Imran Ansari, is stuck in a courtroom today. He's got some big cases coming up. So we've gone to the deep, deep bench that we have here to lend some legal expertise to the discussion. And Andy McCarthy, former prosecutor for the Southern District, and one of the, I still think, top legal minds in the country joins us. He's also a fellow for the National Review, writes a lot of legal commentary for them as well. Andy, thank you as always for sharing your time with us.
Kevin, it's my pleasure.
Let me delve in because there's so much to get to, but let's start with the Supreme Court taking up Donald Trump's case. I've seen a lot of lawyers in the last 24 hours talk about the impact that this could have. Potentially, is this the type of thing that settles the matter for all states? In other words, even Illinois just yesterday said, you know, oh, we're gonna think about playing around with ballot access, and he's off ours for the time being. If the Supreme Court says no to Colorado, it applies everywhere, right?
Well, depending on how they decide the case, but I would think it will decide for all states, Kevin. What I'm concerned about is whether they'll decide it in terms of both the states and federal law. And what I mean by that is if they don't reach in their decision, which when I heard the oral argument, it didn't seem to me like they were very anxious to dive into this, but if they don't decide what an insurrection is as a matter of law and what a person needs to do to engage in one, which is what the words of that provision of the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment say, what I'd be concerned about is even if that means the states can't take Trump off the ballot, it wouldn't stop the federal government, meaning Congress, on the next January 6th after in 2025, wouldn't stop Democrats from saying that Trump's disqualified because he's an insurrectionist. So I hope they decide the whole thing.
Well, it's going to be that part of it would be certainly another wrinkle to it big time. But I want to go back to the claim that Colorado's making, because the Secretary of State in Maine came to her own conclusion. Illinois is coming to its conclusion. But they're all coming to conclusions that have not even been argued before a court of law yet. And I thought that innocent until proven guilty applied to everybody. And that if you were a former president, you didn't get left out of that innocent until proven guilty provision.
Well, let's remember, innocent until proven guilty, the real function of it in our system is as a presumption in a criminal trial. So what the people who are pushing the Fourth Amendment Section 3 are claiming is that it's not a criminal proceeding and that the state has a right to concoct whatever proceeding it wants to determine if someone's an insurrectionist or not. And the reason I think they're going to lose on that is, while we've talked a lot about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, I don't think there's been enough discussion of Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, which empowers Congress, not the states,
right,
to make rules that for enforcing the provisions of the 14th Amendment. After the 14th Amendment was adopted, Congress passed two statutes. One was a civil lawsuit that was based on a finding of insurrection. And the other is what comes to us in the criminal code today is Section 2383 of the Federal Penal Code, which is makes it a crime to engage in insurrection. The civil lawsuit, Kevin, fell out of the law in around 1942. It's not exactly clear why, but the criminal statute's been on the books since 1870. And I think what that means, and I hope that the court will say this, is that if you want to find somebody to be an insurrectionist, it was up to Congress to decide how to make that finding. And what they've given us is a criminal statute that no one's been prosecuted for at this point.
Well, and you're coming to this by saying this is the textual conclusion of the meaning of the language of the statutes. Like, in other words, if somebody else wants to do something else and they want to imagine that the text says whatever it wants to say, but it's pretty clear, as you pointed out in Section 5, that Congress is the one empowered, and Congress has or has not designed its standard by which that's met. And in none of these three states has that standard been met. Am I reading the tea leaves right here?
No, you're exactly right. And what we heard in the oral argument, which was a fascinating discussion, I thought, was that there was a judicial decision by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, not acting as the Chief Justice. I believe it was a circuit or district decision. But at the time, it was Salmon Chase, and he ruled that to enforce the 14th Amendment, you would need a procedure that was enacted by Congress. And it was on the basis of that decision that Congress changed the law and enacted the insurrection civil and criminal statutes. So the whole reason that that is in the law, the criminal provision, is because Congress assumed from what the Supreme Court, or at least what the federal courts were saying at the time, that this is what they needed to do to enforce that provision. And I think the court should adopt that as its map going forward. And that way, you know, look, if Trump or anyone else got indicted for insurrection and they got convicted by a jury, then you'd have a good argument that they should be taken off the ballot.
Correct.
But I would just point out that 1,260 people now have been prosecuted one way or another in connection with January 6th. Not a single person was charged by the Justice Department with insurrection because they don't have enough evidence.
Well, and that's, so to me, this is where the whole dress unwinds by pulling on one strand of thread. Like, it's just, you've got such a concoction of, you know, imagination that they have come to say that they have the right to do this. And I don't know what ultimately their end game is. If they want to get Trump nominated and they want him to be the nominee, it seems to me that that's the outcome that these decisions lead to, because eventually when the court does decide for sanity, he's going to have benefited from all of the backlash that his followers have, you know, lined up for. So it's like, so you almost wonder if they're not really trying to push him as the nominee, and that's why they continue to do this, especially once you start. I didn't understand the Illinois rationale yesterday. I mean, okay, for a few days you get to say that you did it, but when the court speaks, if it reverses it, it's done, and your case is over too.
We have to remember that there's two different audiences here, and this is informative for us, not just with respect to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, but a lot of the stuff that's gone on in New York with respect to Trump. And that is, you have the Democrats' overarching desire to beat Trump in the 2024 election. But then you also have these progressive politicians who are very ambitious in their own states and municipalities, who realize that it's good politics to go after Trump,
yeah,
even if it's not lasting. So I think that's why Tish James did it. I think that's why Alvin Bragg did it in New York. And I think that's why the woman in the Secretary of State in Maine did it. And I think that's what's behind this Illinois thing as well.
Well, speaking of New York, we will turn there next. He's Andy McCarthy. I'm Kevin McCullough. So glad to have you with us. Stay right here. It's Kevin McCullough.
I'm Keith Peters reporting. The House has passed another short-term spending measure that would keep one set of federal agencies operating through March 8th and another set through March 22nd. The legislation approved Thursday will allow Congress to avoid a shutdown for parts of the federal government set to kick in Saturday. President Biden and Donald Trump are in Texas for dueling visits to the U.S.-Mexico border. It's a sign of how central immigration has become in the 2024 campaign. Biden wants to hammer Republicans for tanking a bipartisan border security deal on Trump's orders. Biden was in Brownsville, Texas, while Trump was 300 miles away at a state park that at the epicenter of a standoff between Texas and the federal government over enforcement. On Wall Street, the Dow by 47 points, the Nasdaq rose 144. More details at srnnews.com.
Two games remain on the Syracuse basketball schedule, including Saturday's clash at Louisville. The Orange go for the season sweep of the Cardinals Saturday at 8 on AM 970, The Answer. New York's home for Syracuse University basketball.
Are you ready for an adventure of a lifetime? Journey with me, Mike Gallagher, and Dr. Sebastian Gorka on the Patriots Alaska Cruise this summer. It's going to be an incredible opportunity to engage with other like-minded patriots on an epic 7-day cruise over 4th of July. Witness the untouched wilderness of Alaska while discussing America's future. Join Dr. Gorka and me, Mike Gallagher, from June 29th through July the 6th. Call 855-565-5519 or reserve online at PatriotsAlaskaCruise.com.
Want more AM 970 The Answer? Take us on the go with our Listen Live feature at AM970TheAnswer.com or download our AM 970 The Answer app today. Just go to the iPhone App Store or Google Play Store and search AM 970 The Answer.
Listen to us online at AM970TheAnswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
This is Dennis Prager. I am excited to announce the all-new Pragertopia Plus. You can listen to my show whenever it's convenient for you, all commercial-free and all on demand. Now with Prager Plus, search topics, guests, and segments all the way back to 2010. And now a truly exciting new benefit, my monthly online video get-together for Pragertopia Plus members only. This is where for an hour each month, Pragertopia Plus members get an exclusive chance to ask me anything. That's right, anything. It's on video. I'll be talking to you and answering your questions. We may even have a special guest every now and then. I've never done this. Submit your questions for me at Pragertopia.com. This is only available to Pragertopia Plus members. This is our chance to connect like never before. Go to Pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
This is Joe Piscopo. The following is a medical minute sponsored by my friends at InfuCare RX. InfuCareRx.com. Improving quality of life one patient at a time.
March is National Nutrition Month, an annual campaign created by the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Dietitians help patients in various settings to make healthy food choices by incorporating new foods and flavors in their meal plans. As a registered dietitian, I work with patients who receive parenteral nutrition or intravenous nutrition at home. Our goal is to inspire people to make good food choices and create custom plans to meet their daily nutritional requirements, whether the nutrients are eaten by mouth or delivered intravenously. Stay tuned to learn more about parenteral nutrition during the month of March.
This Medical Minute is sponsored by InfuCareRx, and the information, comments, or views expressed by the guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of InfuCareRx. Please consult your medical professional for any medical questions, opinions, or guidance.
Breaking news and local news. Find it on our website, am970theanswer.com.
And now, from New York, back to Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin McCullough.
Welcome back. Kevin McCullough dissecting some of the legal news of the day, and glad to do so with Andy McCarthy, who has really got deeper insights on a lot of this stuff than many of the people that you see on TV. He is on TV. But there's a difference in who I listen to. And Andy, I hope you're not insulted by this breakdown, but I heard a clip from Rachel Maddow this morning in which she literally said that the purpose of the Supreme Court as it's currently constructed, and I think she's making an argument that it has to be constructed differently, but that the purpose of it is to essentially install Trump as permanent dictator for life. And the way she connected the dots was the most bizarre series of arguments I've ever heard in my life. And yet that was where she landed. And she's one of the smart kids over at MSNBC. I mean, they had some other guys on that were far less articulate and far more kind of buffoonish in what they had to say. But that was one of the serious arguments that they made over there. And I have to ask, when you as an attorney, and especially with your seasons of practice and understanding of the system and how, you know, all of this works, you see it for what it is, good, bad, ugly, indifferent. When you hear that kind of analysis, what goes through your head as someone who knows the workings of the court? And I would be shocked to ever hear you say something quite that absurd.
Well, I appreciate that. I think what Rachel and the rest of them are doing over there is trying to lay the groundwork for packing the court if the Democrats are successful in the next election and they have the numbers to do it. This is, you know, something I think they've been up to for a while. That argument's patently ridiculous. I mean, if we can remember, Kevin, I know that people's historic sense doesn't go back very far, but let's talk about the days of yore, about, you know, 5 or 10 minutes ago when it was Jack Smith, the special counsel, who went into the Supreme Court and told them this was a vital case, this the immunity case, and that they should cut out the D.C. Circuit, and the court, the Supreme Court itself, needed to take this important constitutional law question that was unsettled and settle it. So it was he who initially told the Supreme Court that they needed to take this case, which has now caused big freak out on the left that they actually took the case.
Well, the day that they said that they were taking it up to the Supreme Court, I think I asked you on that very same day on the radio, don't they run a risk of having this all backfire on them? And even if they kick it back down to the circuit court, like, doesn't all of this have the potential to blow his case entirely? And if they decide, God forbid, that he actually does have immunity, oh my goodness, what does that do to all the other cases?
Yeah, but the thing is, there's no reason to think they're going to decide that he has immunity. And if these guys were on the ball, what they'd be worried about is not immunity. They'd be worried about obstruction. The immunity case they're taking because, in part, the prosecutor told them it was a very important case that merited a Supreme Court decision, and Trump asked them to take it. But if they were really trying to help Trump and hurt the other side, what they would have done is taken it as a regular Supreme Court case, which means it would have been argued sometime next term and decided sometime next year. And instead, what they did was they took it on exactly the expedited basis that that Smith asked for. So, you know, I would also remind people, this is the same Supreme Court that two terms ago ruled against Trump on two immunity claims when he said he was trying to fight a subpoena from the Democrat-controlled Congress for his financial records and from the Manhattan District Attorney.
Right.
And this Supreme Court turned him down flat. The only change that has happened on the court is one progressive's been swapped out for another, but otherwise it's the same court. So the idea that, like, they're now suddenly, you know, using this to install Trump, when the big problem with Smith's case is not immunity, the big problem with Smith's case is he doesn't have an insurrection case.
Well, and having been on the other end of that many, many years, as, you know, someone who cares passionately about issues that have been before the court, that scrutiny runs both ways. And it's best if, when you make a case, that you nail it down, you lock it up, you make sure that your argument is airtight, because that's why we have the system that we have, and that's why they're there. They're there to basically protect the Constitution and thereby protect the country in the most understandable way that they can, as it is consistent with what the laws say. And that is, there's no way around that. All right, we've got to take one more fast break, and then we come back. Final segment with Andy McCarthy. I do want to get into where his appeals go, because it's not just the immunity case that the Supreme Court's going to be looking at, but he's appealing the civil case in New York. And then the Fannie Willis thing seems to be falling apart on its face. We'll try to touch on all three of those in the next few minutes. Stay with us. It's Kevin McCullough.
Are you tired of the ups and downs of the stock market? Are you sick of logging into your brokerage account only to find out that you've lost hundreds or thousands of dollars in a single day? At MarketBeat, we know that constantly moving in and out of stocks hoping to get lucky is a loser's game. Buying hot stocks after they've already shot up in value is a recipe for disaster. It's time to stop playing the loser's game and invest in stocks that have shown they can stand the test of time. MarketBeat has prepared a free report titled 7 Stocks to Buy and Hold Forever, and we would like to text it to you for free. Text the word PROFIT to 68285. The companies in this report might appear to be nothing special at first glance, but these companies print billions of dollars of cash each year in profit. If you would like to receive our free report of 7 Stocks to Buy and Hold Forever, simply text PROFIT to 68285 and we'll text you this report instantly. Text PROFIT to 68285 and we'll send you this free report right now. Text the word PROFIT to 68285.
Standard message and data rates may apply. Please consult with your investment or tax professional.
Feel like you're trying to push a boulder uphill, wearing
selling skates? If you run or manage a local business today, you're challenged like never before. We get it, and we want to help. We're Salem Surround, and when it comes to marketing, consider us your personal Move You Forward company. In a recent study, we found that 53% of local businesses were classified as novices when it came to designing, implementing, and managing their marketing needs. And that's where Salem Surround truly shines. We're a full-service marketing agency that'll help you increase your customer base by designing incredibly effective plans to reach your consumers day, night, and everywhere they might be. Let us give you an absolutely free audit of your current marketing and what your competition is doing. Our digital sales and support teams are the best in the industry and deliver customized personal service that's second to none.
If you're a local business and ready for the next step, Google Salem Surround New York right now. Our experts are ready to help you take your marketing to the next level. Google Salem Surround New York today.
Listen to us online at am970theanswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Dennis Prager.
This is Scott Kirby at United Airlines, who is announced we're reserving 50% of our flight school to people of color and women. So he's having affirmative action in the realm of pilots. Would you like that in the realm of surgeons? I don't think that should be in any realm. All it does is undermine those groups.
The Dennis Prager Show. Weekdays at 1, right before Sebastian Gorka at 3, on AM 970. The Answer.
Hi, this is Joan Herman, host of Change Your Attitude, Change Your Life's Conversations with Joan. Conversations with Joan focuses on topics that are important to your life. Every Sunday night, some of the world's most inspirational and influential people join me to discuss health and wellness, professional development, and personal well-being. They share their insights, tips, and strategies so you can thrive and live your best life now. Take time for yourself. Tune into Conversations with Joan every Sunday night at 10 p.m. right here on AM 970 The Answer. If you miss a show, be sure to visit our website so you can listen on demand. And while you're there, read our digital magazine and take part in our book club. Visit CYACYL.com. That's CYACYL.com.
AM 970, The Answer. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Weekday afternoons at 3 and evenings at 10 on AM 970, The Answer. And now, from New York, back to Radio Night Live. Here's Kevin McCullough.
All right, welcome back. Final few minutes with former prosecutor Andy McCarthy. He writes for the National Review. He is their legal opining department. He basically helps so many people understand the legal framework of some of the most complex things. And I'm really personally grateful to you, Andy, for helping me long before I ever knew you in real life, being able to read your stuff and come to a better understanding of what's going on. There's been no doubt that the New York civil case that Letitia James brought against the former president has been ridiculed stem to stern in legal circles. I mean, people that I know personally here in Manhattan that hate Trump believe that this is a joke of a case. He has appealed it. It looks like the appeal is going to be picked up. What happens next in your opinion in this civil case coming out of the Judge Engoron courtroom?
Well, the most important thing, Kevin, is the law, and this is the same really in New York State as federal law. There's a 30-day stay in a prevailing party's ability to enforce the judgment. So basically, that kind of tracks closely with the 30 days that you have to file an appeal. But the bottom line of it is Trump needs to post a bond in the amount of the judgment plus interest in order to convince the court to stay, that is to block enforcement of the judgment, to stop Tish James from starting to seize his property
right
until after the appeal is completed.
And it's exorbitant. It's 120% of the fine.
That's exactly right.
So, but he can do that. I mean, Imran was on with me last week and he said that, you know, a title to one of his buildings, I mean, he's got assets that exceed the $464 million. What does Andy McCarthy think about how it's going to be argued? What is the Trump team going to say?
Well, I wish I was as confident as Imran that he'll be able to post the bond. Yesterday, when they made a submission to the appellate division, they said that they could only come up with $100 million, that it would be impossible to arrange a $500 million instrument. Now, the Court of Appeals stripped from or blocked from Engoron's decision for now the provision that prevented Trump from getting loans in New York. So he may have a little bit more leeway, but that's still going to be a big nut. And it's not like the only game in town for him. He's got this E. Jean Carroll case where he's going to have to post $90 million for the same reason. So he's in something of a bind. As for the appeal, I think he's got a good chance of getting the award knocked down because it's so outsized, it's so disproportionate to the wrong that the state proved. And the other thing I think, Kevin, is this is a very novel use of this statute, which usually is done in consumer protection cases where you have one business that's defrauding a bunch of customers. Each one of them only has a transaction of a few bucks, so nobody has the motivation and the resources to sue. They took a consumer protection statute and applied it in a situation where you are dealing with sophisticated financial actors who have a lot of means, and where both sides of the transaction do their own due diligence. So the fact that there was no victim in this case, it seems to me, is a big deal. And the fact that this is the first time in 70 years that this statute has ever been used in this way is also something that should be cause for concern for the appellate courts.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. It's not just appealing the fine, but appealing the finding of fact in the lower court. I mean, it seemed like this judge had his mind and verdict made up before one witness had been heard. And so to what degree can the appellate court reverse the finding of the lower court on the evidence itself? Can they say, no, there is no truth to this. This is completely made up by this judge.
Yeah, so I would say I would distinguish two kinds of findings of fact, and it's important and appropriate for you to stress that, because appellate courts do not hesitate to reverse lower courts on findings of law, conclusions of law, but they are very hesitant to disturb conclusions of fact. I think where Engoron says things like Trump inflated his assets, or where he says, like, you know, Trump's apartment was less than 11,000 square feet and he valued it as if it were 30,000 square feet, I don't think an appellate court's going to disturb that. But where Engoron came in and adopted, because they couldn't prove that there were any fraud victims, he adopted this very novel formula through expert testimony for calculating what Trump's interest rates and insurance payments would have been if he had accurately valued his assets. I don't think a court of appeals is going to feel like they need to defer to Engoron on that. That's a very novel theory, and it's basically the way that he computed the damages here. So I would think a court of appeals would not defer to Engoron on that and would take a hard look at it.
It just strikes me that at some point, I would want, if I was Trump's attorneys, I would be wanting to challenge his assertions and finding in even something like that, because it seems entirely imaginative to me. Like he just assigned a number and said, okay, that's it.
Well, let me push back on that a little bit, because what Engoron would say is that, first of all, he didn't come up with that number. It's from an assessment that was done in Florida. And the assessment was actually $18 to $27 million. And he wasn't saying that Mar-a-Lago would be worth $18 to $27 million if it could be sold free and clear. You know, Trump might be quite right that it would be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. What Engoron was saying is that under the law of Florida, you have to value property with an eye toward what legal burdens are on it. And that property has a lot of easements on it so that Trump could get certain tax breaks, and it affects the way that you're allowed to use that property. So it's very different than if you had no legal restrictions and you could sell it free and clear. So he may still be, Engeron may still be lowballing the value, but it's not, you know, I think he's gotten unfairly, I think he tried a terrible case, by the way, but I think that particular talking point, which the former president has used very effectively, is a little more complicated than
all right. That's a fair observation. And you're the first person I've heard in the legal punditry to bring up that observation. So thank you for bringing it to our attention. Andy McCarthy, so grateful for your time to be with us. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Great to talk to you.
You got it. Read him in the National Review. You're going to learn stuff every time you do. Kevin McCullough coming right back from New York.
You have all helped support MyPillow and their employees in these tough economic times. Mike Lindell knows this and continues to give back to listeners with deals on his most popular products. You've heard me recently speak about the My Slippers, Giza Sheets, MyPillow 2.0, and more. Great news! The MyPillow 6-pack bath towel sets are back in stock. They are extremely absorbent, yet still provides that soft feel you look for in a towel. The set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. Regular price is $79.98 for a limited time. You can get this 6-pack towel set for only $39.99 with promo code JOEP. That's a 50% savings. Go to MyPillow.com. Call 800-651-0798. Use the promo code JOEP to save 50% on the MyPillow 6-pack towel sets.
My name is Imran Ansari, and I lead the Civil Litigation Division of Idala, Bertuna & Kamens, the preeminent New York litigation law firm. The tires screech, the impact is felt. Boom, you've just been in a car accident. It's a scary situation that none of us want to experience. But if you have been injured in a car accident, then you may be entitled to significant monetary compensation for your injuries. It's important you speak to an attorney right away to make sure your rights are protected. Myself and our team of experienced trial attorneys will never settle for less than what you deserve. We are always ready to go to court to fight for you and seek justice. So if you or a loved one have been injured in an accident, don't delay. Call Idala, Bertuna, and Kamen at 212-486-0011. That's 212-486-0011. Or visit us on the web at idalalaw.com. Idalalaw.com. Idala, Bertuna, and Kamen's. Fighting for justice, fighting for you.
Are you ready to embark upon an unforgettable expedition this summer? I hope you'll join me, Mike Gallagher, along with Dr. Sebastian Gorka and our special guests on the Patriots Alaska Cruise. We'll unpack the trends and influences shaping our world today while sailing the pristine coast of Alaska over 4th of July. Learn more at PatriotsAlaskaCruise.com. This experience is way more than a vacation. It's a chance to participate in spirited discussions and thought-provoking lectures on board the ship with like-minded patriots. 7 action-packed days. We'll chart a course toward a bright American future, all while surrounded by Alaska's rustic and natural wonders on a beautiful luxury cruise ship. You'll experience powerful creation immersed in the splendor of glaciers and fjords. Mark your calendar, June 29th, July the 6th. Secure your cabin by calling 855-565-5519 or book online at PatriotsAlaskaCruise.com.
Listen to us online at AM970TheAnswer.com. Tune in, iHeart, Alexa, or Odyssey.com.
Brandon Tatum is next on AM970, The Answer. Once again, from New York, here's Radio Night Live and Kevin McCullough.
All right, Kevin McCullough, glad to have you with us. Final few minutes. It's not a legal issue, but it is one of... I don't know. I think it'll make us think a little bit more. A milestone was met in the NC2A women's division yesterday. Caitlin Clark, who has been shattering scoring records for the women's division of NCAA basketball, notched another milestone on her way to the top of the scoring charts yesterday. The Iowa sharpshooter scored 33 points as the Hawkeyes beat Minnesota. Clark surpassed Lynette Woodard for the major college scoring record with 3,650 points. That's a lot of points in 4 years for a college-age player. Iowa coach Lisa Bluder celebrated Clark's milestone, and then took a shot at the NC2A for not recognizing Woodard's mark as the top scorer in women's college basketball. Woodard played for the Kansas Jayhawks in the AIAW era. I don't know what those things stand for. That was before the NC2A began sanctioning women's basketball. Bluter, the coach, said, "Tonight is the night of the real record. For some reason, the NC2A does not want to recognize the basketball that was played prior to 1982, and that was wrong." I didn't realize it was 1982 when the NC2A began acknowledging women's basketball for the first time. That does seem rather late in the game, so to speak. She said, "They just don't want to recognize it, and that hurts the rest of us who were playing at that time. There's no reason why that should not be the true record." Clark and the school celebrated when they surpassed Kelsey Plum for the all-time Division I record. Plum totaled 3,527 points at Washington. Woodard scored 3,649 points from 1977 to 1981. Then the coach went on to say, "Maybe the NC2A will realize that now, maybe it will be brought to their attention, then they will start recognizing those women who played in the 70s. Remember, they played with a larger basketball and no three-point line either." You know what? I forgot about that. That's true. They had to play with the men's ball and the and no three-point line, which girls have gotten very good at shooting three-pointers if you watch their game. Anyway, Clark recognized Woodard as well. The new scoring champion said, "I'm just really thankful and grateful to have those players who have come before me. It's super special. Obviously, she's one of the best of all time. It just still shows the room that we have to improve, and where women's sports is going is a really great place." Clark just sits 17 points behind LSU men's basketball star Pete Maravich for the all-time scoring record in NC2A men's and women's basketball. He scored 36-67 during his time at LSU. I didn't know that. That's pretty amazing that she may break the all-time scoring, even the men's champion, Pete Maravich, who was one of the greats. That'd be remarkable if she was able to do that. And she's gotten the record all on her own, and good for her on being able to do that. I'm Kevin McCullough. Thank you for hanging out with us. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place.